Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
In case you're wondering, this is Your Money with me, Michelle Martin. Good morning. Asia-Pacific markets trading mix this morning following a bout of selling on Wall Street on Friday. Ryan Huang is here to break down all the market action. How are you, Ryan?
Doing great. How's your weekend, Michelle?
It was fantastic. Wonderful. But let's start today with Elon Musk. He's always a great way to start Monday off, I think. There's so much to say always. It's been a pretty good weekend for the world's second richest man. First of all, you may recall that Musk has been on trial for fraud related to a series of tweets that he made back in 2018. Now, he had indicated in those tweets that he had secured financing to privatize Tesla. And when that didn't happen, U.S. regulators sanctioned Musk and disgruntled shareholders took him to court. Well, that trial has just ended with an acquittal. So how did Musk's lawyers, Orion, convince the jury of Musk's innocence?
Yeah, so it's an interesting drama, so to speak, because you have so many twists and turns, and how it planned out or played out in the latest court session is the jury was made to be thinking about how things are in the world of an entrepreneur. So what they did was the defense asked jurors to imagine a world through his eyes because things happen differently in that sense. So what actually is at the crux of it is, like you pointed out, the tweet funding secured. And how the business world works in that world is slightly different to how people normally go about their dealings. So he says he had a meeting with the investor from Saudi Arabia. They had a handshake, and this is something that gave him enough confidence that something would be in the pipeline. And he also was afraid that his plans to go private might be leaked by the press, which is why he decided to go ahead to be more transparent in that sense, be more forthcoming, and to reveal it. So in that sense, that was his motivation to be publicizing that he had funding secured. So in that lens, you kind of have to, ask a question. Was he being more forthcoming? Was he being transparent? And if you look at the points he raised, he does have a good point.
Observers are dusting off an old nickname for Musk. You know, they're calling him Teflon Musk because it seems all the allegations against him just don't stick. What do you think?
Yeah, this has been his track record. So I guess one of the world's richest guys has one of the world's best lawyers. Not a surprise. It plays out quite similarly elsewhere as well. Going by how things are playing out, it does look like it's going in that direction.
Another possible cause for Musk to celebrate this morning is that his SpaceX company is reportedly close to launching a reusable, get this, spacecraft. So what's the latest on this front?
Yeah, so it looks like SpaceX is planning to attempt to launch its reusable Starship rocket into orbit in March. And here's the big caveat, if remaining tests go well. So this was in response to Twitter asking if Starship was almost ready for launch. So March is not too far away, but then there's a huge caveat that if things go well. If you've been following the news, it has not been entirely super PG when it comes to SpaceX operations. So you have recently a prototype for what is called a super heavy rocket. So last July, it burst into flames. So that's an example of how tough it is to execute some of these space operations. So it is, if things go well, going to be something that will happen in March. And of course, you've got the weather to worry about. So a lot of moving parts, but it's quite an optimistic sign that he is able to at least give definitive date of sorts that if things go well, March could be something to look forward to.
Musk's ambition to colonize Mars is attracting criticism from another giant in the tech world. I am talking about Bill Gates. In an interview with the BBC, Gates said going to Mars is not good use of money and he'd rather fund vaccines and save lives on this planet. So should we put Gates' comments in context? I mean, there is some ill will between Musk and Gates, isn't there?
Yeah, there has been some history between them. So they've been debating, if you want to put it kindly, over the years. So there was one point in history where Elon Musk asked Bill Gates if he was short-selling Tesla. And this is something, that came about when Gates revealed back in 2020, about 2 years ago or 3 years ago, that he bought himself an all-electric Porsche. So this is something that made Elon Musk wonder if Gates decided to go to another company and shorted Tesla. So he responded in a tweet that his conversations with Gates has been underwhelming, to be honest. So he has been throwing a lot of shade since Bill Gates revealed that he did not buy a Tesla and went for his competitors instead. So there's been this ongoing dispute. And since that time, you've got Bill Gates also putting his plans under some scrutiny as well, saying, no, it's not a great idea to go to Mars. You can just easily use the money for greater use, for example, buying vaccines for measles. And this is going to be something that will continue to play out for a long time, I think.
One more item in the Elon Musk files before I promise we will move on, listener. There is something that is attracting some criticism. In an effort to prop up Twitter's finances, Musk is introducing a new fee for verified business accounts. How much is he going to charge, Ryan?
It is quite a big figure, but I guess for a company, it might be just loose change. $1,000 per month for organizations hoping to get the blue tick. So this is all part of the revamped Twitter Blue program. So if you pay $1,000 for every sub account, you pay $50. So you can imagine the type of money that could possibly roll in once this gets underway. And of course, a lot of companies may still want to hold on to the blue check mark. So it's quite innovative, I have to say, that Elon Musk is trying to find new revenue streams. I'm also seeing a new model he's trying to push for, which is to incentivize Twitter content users. So if you tweet, you might actually get paid a slice of ad revenue, because he says when you read replies, you might be served ads as well. So for every Twitter thread starter, he is thinking of rewarding them, so to speak, with some of the ad revenue. And in order to get a slice of the ad revenue, you have to join Twitter Blue. $8 a month. So it's quite innovative the way he's trying to incentivize the ecosystem, more people to start interesting conversations, and more people to join Twitter Blue.
Clearly, monetizing Twitter has been top of Musk's to-do list. Overnight, Musk tweeted that Twitter is nearly out of the red and coming close to a break-even point. Tesla shares have soared over the past month, up a whopping 68%. So if we zoom out, Ryan, take a look at the broader markets now. Take a breath from the Elon Musk files. U.S. stocks suffered a sell-off on Friday following the release of some pretty good economic data. Hiring in the U.S. surged in January. The U.S. economy added more than 500,000 jobs. The unemployment rate in the U.S. now at the lowest level since 1969, just 3.4%. So let's zero in on that sell-off. Why exactly did U.S. investors sell off?
Yeah, so it was quite a back and forth week. So we had to start things first with the FOMC. So after the press conference, investors were walking away thinking that the Fed might do less because of what Jerome Powell said, that he's starting to recognize that disinflationary pressures at play. And then going into the jobs report, they were blindsided by a really strong jobs report. 517,000 jobs created in January. That is more than two times the 187,000 based on consensus forecasts. So that flips the whole table around. And now it's back on again that the Fed could actually do more to try to tame the jobs market. And that weighed on jobs, whether the indexes on Friday. So the S&P 500 down 1%, the NASDAQ lower by 1.6%, and the Dow lower by 0.4%. So quite a bit worrying investors.
I was reading an investor newsletter by SPI Asset Management's Stephen Innes, friend of the show. He argues that the U.S. market's recent gains have been driven by a steep decline in Treasury yields, which in turn has been based on expectations that the U.S. Federal Reserve will pivot and start cutting rates this year. As you mentioned, the strong U.S. jobs numbers seem to make any rate cuts in the near future unlikely. What's on the calendar this week, Ryan? What are investors looking out for?
Okay, a couple of things to watch out for. Actually, quite a quiet one relatively on the data front. Tomorrow, there is the RBA rate decision from Australia. By and large, being penciled in is a quarter point rate hike. But there are some talk about how it could be more because the inflation picture is just not going away in Australia. So that could be one that could help support the Australian dollar, at least in the near term, if we do get an upside surprise. Also, on the earnings front, we've got the likes of Disney, as well as Take-Two and Activision Blizzard. So this will give a glimpse into the picture when it comes to consumer spending, and of course not to leave out PepsiCo as well. So these are the earnings that are likely to drive market sentiment this week.
Earnings season continues in high gear in the US market. Nearly 90 S&P 500 companies, including Uber, PayPal, Disney, yep, they're going to report earnings. All right, we turn from Musk to Gautam Adani, who has dropped from number 3 to number 17 on the world's richest list thanks to a short seller attack on his company shares. At one point on Friday's trade, I saw shares of Adani Enterprises down 35%. They rallied to finish the day in positive territory. No one is really expecting the saga to wrap up anytime soon, though. Over the weekend, Adani shelved plans to raise as much as 10 billion rupees, or about 160 million US dollars, via its first ever public bond sale. Gautam Adani has also been meeting with creditors and is reportedly considering prepaying some loans. What's the latest here?
Yeah, it looks like he is prioritizing different things right now. So we have Adani Enterprises shelving that public sale of bonds, and that will have raised $122 million. And of course, we've been talking about how he had actually had a done deal with the $2.5 billion share sale before pulling the plug on it. So it does look like you have Adani trying to prioritize long-term relationships with his investors instead of just making money in the short term. So I think that's where he is right now. He's got already so much money and, you know, things in play. He doesn't need it that fast, so he's able to afford the waiting game, so to speak, by just playing it out and reassuring investors in the meantime, you know, shoring up confidence and just doing what he needs to do. So he has been denying all the allegations, and of course investors still having a hard time buying what he's saying, and these pressures are still going to be underway. What's worth noting is this week we'll see some earnings reports coming through from some of the Adani companies. So that could be something to steer markets, at least on the Adani side of things.
Indeed, the market value of Adani's companies have slumped by nearly half since Hindenburg Research released that scathing report. That was about 2 weeks ago, and it accused Adani of stock manipulation, you remember, and accounting fraud. There have been a few positive developments for Adani over the last couple of days, though. The ratings agency Fitch says it has no immediate plans to downgrade Adani bonds, and two top investment banks, Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan Chase, have reportedly told clients that Adani-related debt could still be a good investment. More details, meanwhile, are coming to light about the companies and the individuals with exposure to the Adani Group. Near the top of the list is at least one Singapore-listed company, Wilmer International. Tell us more.
Yeah, so Wilmer is in partnership with Adani, and this is the joint venture Adani-Wilmer. So they are under the crosshairs for potential spillover effects. So this is with the company owned by the family of Malaysia's richest person, Robert Kwok. And this is in that JV in India involving packaged food companies that sells flour, sugar and other staples. Also worth watching is retail giant Walmart. So roughly half of which is owned by the world's second richest family, the Waltons, is exposed to Adani companies through its Indian subsidiary Flipkart. Also one to watch out for is CMA CGM, the world's third biggest container shipping company. They've signed a 15-year deal with Adani Group back in 2017 to run a terminal at Mundra Port. And of course, Abu Dhabi-based International Holdings is also making the news recently, one of the group's most critical backers. In fact, they were the first to put up their hands to offer $400 million in that follow-on offering. And Temasek as well, through its unit Kamas Investments, they own a small stake of just over 1.2% in Adani Ports and Special Economic Zones. So this is something they bought back in 2018 for about $147 million.
Another company making headlines for its big stake in Adani is the French energy giant Total. It revealed on Friday that it has invested more than $3 billion in Adani companies. All right, it's time for Up or Down. Let me check the clock. Yeah. Corporate news and Up or Down time. Are you ready, Ryan?
Let's go.
Let's start with an AI company called Anthropic.
All right, so this is going to be an up for me. So Google, based on reports, has invested $400 million in this AI startup. And of course, all in the name of competing with OpenAI.
Indeed, Anthropic, the potential rival to ChatGPT. So Google investing $400 million in it. It's a significant sum. It's still a lot less than what Microsoft is investing in OpenAI. That's the maker of ChatGPT, about 25 times less, in fact. So I'm actually going to give this investment a down, unless it turns out that Google is getting a real bargain with Anthropic. All right, our next entry, locally listed one, CapitaLand China Trust.
Yeah, I'll go down based on its latest results. So it's posting a 24.4% drop in its DPU for the second half, and that is at 3.4 cents. And this is off the back of distributable income falling about 20% on lower retail performance, higher interest expenses, as well as the absence of one-off gains.
Last year's COVID zero lockdowns really taken a bite out of CapitaLand China Trust revenues. And as a result, unit holders will receive nearly 25% less in distribution. So a down in my book. The Taiwanese electronics maker Foxconn, Ryan.
All right. I am looking at an up. So if you look at revenue in January, it jumped more than 48% for Foxconn. And this is a sign that it's shaking off the disruptions, COVID-19 disruptions in China. So it reached a record high of over $22 billion. So good news for Foxconn.
Indeed, and it is one of the world's largest contract electronics makers. So the numbers, real sign that the company's operations in China are returning back to normal. Revenue jumping nearly 50% in January compared to a year earlier. Foxconn, also one of the biggest assemblers of Apple iPhones. Let's look at the Japanese yen.
Okay, it's going to be a down for me. So the yen under pressure on some reports that the BOJ deputy governor is in line to replace his boss. And this is a sign that investors are taking that things will stay the way they are in terms of the ultra-easy monetary policy, at least in the near term, because he was one of the guys behind it, creating that policy. So they are thinking he's not going to shake the boat.
Foxconn's revenue up, yep, and Japanese yen a down, sliding on news that the Bank of Japan's current deputy governor Masayoshi Amamiya is being considered for the BOJ's top job. I think he's likely going to continue the BOJ's current easy money policy. That's what I'm hearing from analysts that I've spoken with. Let's check in on the Singapore markets right now. As REITs have been outperforming the overall market since the beginning of the year, the iEdge S-REIT index up nearly 9%. It has risen at more than twice the pace of the STI. So what exactly is fueling the REIT sector?
Yeah, I think last month you have to take into consideration what's been playing out on the macro front. And this is the FOMC meeting last week where there was just a lot of expectations that the Fed would be able to take its foot off the pedal with a smaller rate hike. 25 basis points is what we got. And this is down from 50 from a prior meeting, which was down from 75 in the prior meetings from last year. So in effect, you have what's being seen as a slowdown in interest rate hikes, which some investors are pricing in as good news for REITs, which have been under pressure, at least seeing some headwinds when it comes to borrowing, the cost of borrowing. But now with the slower pace of interest rate hikes, there's some return of market sentiment towards these rate-sensitive sectors like REITs, which is looking like they are recovering.
So do you think REITs can keep up the momentum?
If you look at some of the early signs, there are some reasons to argue that could be the case. First, the big one is the China reopening picture, which is going to be a big tide to lift a lot of REITs in terms of economic activity. And then if you dive into some of the fundamentals for some of these REITs, like Keppel DC REIT, it's looking at the data center growth opportunity, which is a long-term play. And if you look at some of the stuff that MapleTree Pan Asia Commercial Trust is saying, it has been driven by some of the M&A activity from its Singapore portfolio, and it's also seeing positive rental reversion being seen in all markets so far, except Greater China. So that's something that's quite encouraging, that activity is picking up. Also, positive rental reversions for likes of Frasers Logistics and Commercial Trust. So there are some healthy signs that leasing momentum is picking up for many of these REITs.
All right. Well, thank you very much. He's Ryan Huang. I'm Michelle Martin.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.